Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post, who is coming to us not from Florida today.
From Dallas, live and alive from Dallas.
I've got to say this. I've not been to Dallas, but I have been to Houston a number of times. Having driven, by the way, to Houston a number of times, I can now understand why people talk about Texas being its own country.
Texas I have never, is our largest country.
It goes on forever when you're driving.
It's got three time zones, I think. Three time zones in Texas. Mountain time, central time, and Eastern time, I think. I could be wrong about that. But anyway, Florida has two time zones, which is odd, but
I didn't realize that about Florida.
And for those of you that, this is not what I was going to talk about at the beginning, but for those of you that love a good conspiracy theory, you know, JFK's assassination occurred here in Dallas, and there's a number of new documentaries on the part of the oldest surviving witnesses on, I think, Netflix or Hulu. There's also on the witnesses in the medical team and what they saw. It's really interesting. Really interesting documentaries. But what I did want to talk about today.
Yes.
Is I wanted to remind everybody of the gentle art of Swedish death cleaning, aka decluttering, dehoarding, downsizing, which is really important since we're going to talk about our passion and finding our passion today.
Right.
If that leads into hobbies, then it's really important to keep a handle on your hobbies, meaning like you want to be able to do your hobbies. You don't want your hobbies to do you. like they take over your life. So the gentle art of Swedish death cleaning is this concept that as we age, most people like to downsize. Like they like to downsize into a smaller home once the children are gone, or as they age, they don't want to take care of a yard, so they want to downsize into a condo. Or
that was our best of intentions when we supposedly downsized
with your orchard and your.
We want just a right. The original intent was a small yard, just enough for the dogs to run. We didn't want a pool. We didn't want. And look at us now.
I know, with your orchard and your maze. But see, you're young enough at this point that you can maintain all of that, right? Yes. But at some point when we age, it becomes a lot for us to maintain a yard, a house, all the stuff inside of a house. So the gentle art of Swedish death cleaning is this idea of kind of the Marie Kondoing, you know, where you hold your items and you decide, do they bring me joy or are these around to guilt trip me? And one of the best books that I can recommend if you're moving or you're doing a spring cleaning is The Hoarder in You. It's amazing. We might want to do a little episode on that because I took these great notes about how to tell where you are between clutterer and hoarder, how like what are the things if you have a clutterer in your life, like what are the nice things to say? What are the unhelpful things to say? But it's such a good thing for your mental health to know where everything is. Like talk about your financial health, right? If you know where everything is, you know when you're running low and you don't waste money on buying things you already have, right? If you know where everything is, you use the stuff in your fridge and your freezer without it going bad, as opposed to piling up things that then you waste money on because you forgot they were in your freezer or at the back of your fridge.
What is it George Carlin said? There are things in my refrigerator that are turning into petroleum.
Good job, George. Yes, exactly. Like that, when I clean out my fridge and I find stuff that I didn't realize was in there, I feel like, oh, this is so sad. You know, what a waste of money. I didn't need to do this. And so it's just a good habit to get in and developing good habits about it, not just
Downsizing. I'm gonna push back a little bit here because mm-hmm. I will tell you one benefit, and I'm certainly not a hoarder, but I will tell you, mm-hmm. I do collect different things as I look around the room. We've talked many times about the downsizing, uh-huh. et cetera, as both of us moved, and the joy of what I do is finding stuff you forgot you had, and it's like going to the store and getting new stuff.
Yes. Well, also, like going shopping in your closet can be kind of fun. Or finding that dollar bill in your jeans can be kind of fun. Like, again, I'm not talking about that, except ideally having the stuff you love visible, at least where like you can enjoy it and take it in, as opposed to hidden at the back of your closet, collecting dust.
Yeah, and it's... I'm looking around upstairs in my office right now. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff up here. And I'm trying to see if any of it doesn't have any emotional component to it, which is a like versus a fear that there won't be enough of it. So I need more of it.
Yes, exactly. A fear that, oh, I need this now because the store might run out.
Yeah.
Or I've got to get this because there's a sale on it. Those 2-for-1 sales.
Oh, now wait, I have done that one.
I have a lot, but use it, right? As opposed to forget, I bought this thing because there's a 2-for-1 thing and then I never use it.
Yeah.
I just forget I have it and I buy more of it.
Now that said, you know, I think our listeners know I'm into magic and divination and fortune telling. And my wife wound up, as part of our move, got me these giant cargo cases.
Oh.
You know, they're like travel trunks, you know, the kind that have,
I don't
know how to describe them. They've got the leather over the top. It looks like straps. Beautiful. Like you'd see on Titanic, right?
Yes.
Which may be a metaphor right there.
See, that's why we all have an order in us.
And I have literally... I want you to imagine steam trunks, 2 of them filled with decks of cards.
Oh, wow.
I mean, literally, I could open a store with cards.
Yes. Wow. But is your family complaining about it? Is it taking over the rest of the house?
Oh, no, no.
Do you know where they are?
Yeah, they're two. Everything in its place, every place in its thing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I can tell you where everything is. I think it's part of that whole little visual memory thing that I've got.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But being very creative, which, by the way, will lead into today's subject, being very creative, I always want to have enough supplies, for lack of a better way to put it, in order to implement the creativity.
Absolutely. I get that.
So there's a lot of art supplies. There are a lot of magic props. There are now, that said, I will tell you, I hoard books. I'm looking around also. Yeah. I mean, I've got a stack of books in by the bath because I love to soak and read. I've got a stack of books in the nightstand next to my bed. Uh-huh. I'm looking at my bookshelf, the top shelf. There are books that still need to be read. I have a pile sitting on the floor of books that I still want to implement for further coaching and or radio podcast episodes. Uh-huh. I hoard books. I'll admit it there.
I would say, you know, like one good challenge for you might be keep one book on the nightstand, because usually you can only read one book at a time.
I read 3 or 4 at a time, Michelle.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do. Time,
like you just lay 3 across your chest and you do one page from page 1 and one page from book 2 and one page from book 3.
I have, my wife has made these wonderful handmade bookmarks for me.
Yes.
And I am in the process of reading 1, 2, 3 books at the moment at the same time, depending on how I feel. I don't mean at this. I don't mean concurrently. It's I'll pick up. It's like when you watch a TV show. Do you feel like watching this show today, or do you feel like watching that?
Makes sense. Sure.
So I flip between my intention.
Yes.
For a book.
Yes.
But they're going on at the same time.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I don't just sit down and read one book.
Right. Like from my perspective, I might say the books that you're currently reading deserve a shelf somewhere. And when you're about to go and get a bath or you're about to go to bed, there can be like a beautiful nighttime or bath time ritual where you go over to the books you're currently sorting through and you go, what am I in the mood for?
Yes. Oh, but see, that destroys the rest of my ritual. Because I'm currently, so there's a, we've actually never spoken about the gentleman. His name's Phil Stutz. He's a psychologist out of Los Angeles. And there's a documentary on Netflix about him called Stutz, S-T-U-T-Z. And I absolutely love his approach to therapy. Let's just call it what it is. It's a no bullshit, don't give me your shit approach to therapy. It's all results driven. And I saw the documentary, I got the book. Well, I'm in the process of going through his tools book. There's a sequel. So part of my ritual is to put the sequel under the book I'm reading. So I know there's another one to come.
So you don't delay finishing the book
because I know
you're
there's
enjoying
more.
It so much because you know there's more.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I think that makes a lot of sense.
God, Michelle, I think I need help.
Stack on the floor.
I guess if that's the worst hoarding thing I've got, then
you're okay. Yeah. Is it taking over the rest of the house?
No. Well, yeah.
Oh, all right. Talk to your wife.
Well, it does sometimes.
Talk to your wife and how she feels.
You know what?
Like,
we just had
peaceful.
We just had everybody over for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I think historically, I'm looking at the different holidays because we have parties here. The consistent theme for all the parties is Scott picking up and hiding his reading materials.
Okay. Awesome. Oh, speaking of Thanksgiving, I hope all our listeners had a wonderful Thanksgiving. That you were able to get in touch with gratitude. We love a gratitude practice, helps us with managing stress and keeps your shit together. Yeah. So I hope you were able to gather with your friends on a Friendsgiving or family or just, you know, just have some good alone time and time away from work just to reflect and be grateful.
Very much so. Yeah. Shall we move into today's topic?
Absolutely.
So today we are literally talking about finding your passion now, with the emphasis for me on now. I know your emphasis is on passion. so I'm curious because I have always struggled with not only on my own, but with clients, helping them differentiate between passion and purpose because they're not the same thing.
Yeah, no.
They can be, but they're not really the same thing. And so I'm curious as to how you use the word passion.
So for me, I use the word passion as what do you enjoy? What is fun for you? What do you like doing? How do you do more of it? For some people, that crosses over into their work life and what they feel is their purpose. And for other people, their work life is their day job and their bread and butter, and they might enjoy it, but it's not like something that they want to talk about all the time, that they want to corner someone at a party and bore them to death about. It's not a deep dive, joy eliciting experience. And so when I think about finding your passion and what that does to help you keep your shit together, is your passion gives you joy. It replenishes you. It gives you something to look forward to. It helps you get through difficult times because it's in your life. That's what I define as passion?
I think it's going to be an interesting discussion today then, because mm-hmm. my view of passion is a little different. Mm-hmm. For me, passion is equal to motivation.
Ah, okay.
So okay. And I say that because I have been complimented and accused, right? There's a double face to this, mm-hmm. of being intense and passionate about everything that I do. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when I think back on my own approach to life, mm-hmm. it's, I don't sleepwalk through things. Like, I won't tell you I've never done it, but it's like, even this podcast, it's bring it all, bring your get your A game, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and be motivated about it, or don't frickin' do it, is yeah, kind of my yeah, approach yeah. to passion. Okay. Now that also has the double-edged sword of, I can be very intense and very forceful and very, mm-hmm. I like to think of it as persuasive, but it's like, I can get in your face, mm-hmm. because I feel so deeply about something. If I don't okay. feel deeply about it, I'm actually not going to talk about it. I can sit in a room and say nothing with people, which I know sounds weird for someone who does a podcast. So it's very interesting for me, too, that you brought up the difference. You marked the difference between passions and hobbies. Mm-hmm. And one of my downsides, by the way, is I don't draw those lines. Mm. And I've actually had some people, particularly magic friends, who've said to me, Scott, can't we just create for the sake of creating?
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that.
You don't know how to do that.
I don't.
But
I know
would
how
you
to
say I know your how to passion energizes you, or creating
Absolutely.
Energizes you?
No. It's all motivating. Uh-huh. Which we'll get to, because there's I happen to the synchronicity of the world dropped in my lap a wonderful little exercise by someone who I love reading, and I'll explain this later, about how to find your passion. And I've used it myself, and I'm going to use it with you today.
Oh, because we're going to find Michelle's passion.
It's a really interesting exploration. It's one question.
Okay.
Before we get to that, though, I'm curious, because I always, in helping people find their passion, mm-hmm. Quote unquote, I always ask them, what did you want to do, be, or, you know, engage in as a little kid?
Me too. That's one of my exercises.
Is it?
Yeah. In fact, sometimes I will have people have a conversation using their dominant writing hand and their non-dominant writing hand, and write a letter writing back and forth between your child self and your adult self. Your adult self is your normal writing hand, and your child self is your non-dominant hand. And you really get in touch with very simple answers about, like, what do you like to do? What do you do for fun? What excites you? So that's one of my exercises.
So if I can pry for a moment. Mm-hmm. And it's not idle curiosity. I think it will help. And we've talked about it before, by the way, so I'm not actually going into something, you know, deep and personal. What did you want to be when you were a little kid?
Oh, so I mean, so many things, which is probably why I can't make any decisions about, mm-hmm. except for, like, I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a teacher. What were some of the other things that came across my at one point I really wanted to be a psychologist. It was like an example. I think I figured out I wanted to be a psychologist, or, you know, a therapist of some sort, by about age 12. I'm one of those weirdos.
Well, and
just see, like, that I like helping people.
So here's the interesting thing, right? That I find, and this is great for all of our listeners to hear this. So thanks for sharing, because
and an artist. I shouldn't have forgotten
right?
about that.
And there's going to be more, right? As uh-huh. you think about it, there'll be more. I think that a lot of us have forgotten what drove us, motivated us, and made us happy as little kids.
Yes.
Right? And then we grew out of it.
Yes.
I, just as a counterpoint, you know, I've always loved, and I can't remember right off the top of my head right now which magician said it, but he always loved to tell the story of someone came up to him and said, you know, he's doing magic, And the person came up to them and says, "Oh, I used to do magic as a kid. I see you didn't grow out of it."
Exactly.
And his response back was, "Why didn't you grow into it?"
Wow.
And right. And it's, and that it's always struck me.
Yes.
That, right. We have very similar things when we were a kid, right? I've always wanted to be an astronaut, always wanted to be a doctor, always wanted, and there are themes behind that. I always wanted to be Batman, but there's the underlying theme, the purpose behind the passion. That's the interesting thing for me. And for listeners, when you explore what you wanted to be as a kid, remember there's a purpose behind the passion when you're a kid, because it made you feel something, right? I wanted to be an astronaut because I wanted the adventure and the exploration and to discover strange new worlds. I wanted to boldly go. I wanted to be a doctor to help people and whatever. And being a doctor, by the way, at one point then moved into wanting to be a rabbi. Very similar purposes,
right?
Different implementations,
right?
And then I left both of those. Now look what I'm doing,
right?
Then I wanted to be Batman, and that was a whole nother purpose behind the passion, right? You can pick any superhero. I chose him for a particular reason. And for all of the listeners, if you'll go, you want instantaneous passion, I'm not asking you to go be an astronaut. Right. If that's what you wanted to be, you know, that point of no return is kind of gone for me, although I know that there have been other people, John Glenn, among others, and William Shatner, who've gone up later in life. But they've also had some background training and they knew people. the reality, though, is the purpose behind the childhood passion doesn't leave you. I really don't think it leaves you.
Right. But the question is very different than if you asked my child self, what do you do for fun? What I did for fun as a kid is still what I do for fun as an adult, which is all artistic, photography, coloring, painting, creating. But that is, and I never turned that into something that I make money at. I never did. At one point, I kind of thought about, you know, could I? I did, but I didn't see that path. And it just became this sacred, rejuvenating, passionate thing that I still do today.
I'm going to give you an observation because I know you well enough. And that is, while you may not have monetized the painting and the crayons, you do bring that same passion to your therapeutic work.
Sure.
You bring that same passion. Well, and I want, again, our listeners to understand it's not compartmentalized like that. Right. Again, we're not talking purpose, and we're not talking your vocation or avocation or your hobby. We're talking about your passion for life.
Yes.
The things that motivate you and drive you on. And if I say, Michelle, I'm willing to bet you're always out exploring new techniques. You're always willing to, take what works for you and bring it into the practice and explore new things. I happen to know you've experienced some new techniques that you've I've never even heard of some of these before that you've told me about. And, you know, it's, you're doing crayons with your life.
Yes. Yes. And I still like doing crayons.
Yes. And again, I for me, in working with people and helping them with to confidently follow their passions, because there's a difference. A lot of people internalize it and then they say, I'm too old for this. What will people think, et cetera? And I self-censor. But with their passions, I'm willing to bet that if you will take the enjoyment behind what you wanted to do as a kid and find the things that turn you on now and light you up now, you're going to find the passion is actually there. You've just ignored it for quite a while.
Yeah. There's links there. Yeah. Makes sense.
The other thing that I point out to listeners, and this won't be true for everybody, but I'll bet is 97% of you, is that your passions have been modified and driven and even created in some cases by your personal belief system.
Okay.
And I think sometimes our personal belief systems get so skewed in the world today because of all the crap that's out there. The crap that tells you should be this, the crap that says you should look like this, the crap that says, you know, this is what other people expect of you, that we fall into, I like to call it the trap. And, you know, we fall into the trap and we don't know a way out of it again. And a great exercise is for people to sit back and write down the simple following list. What are the things in your life you can't live without? And I don't think most of us have ever done that. I think most of us have internalized it. We've intellectualized it, right? We give it lip service. But again, I'll go back to the move you and I made, and we had to downsize during the move, if nothing else.
I know.
I've got a box that's still sitting there 4 years later, almost 4 years later.
Me too.
That box still has things I can't live without. That's what went in that box.
Me too.
And that box went everywhere with me. It's my it's my go box.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's become a comfort box, right? It's like all I have to do is look at it and go, oh.
The things
I can't live without, there's my freaking box.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And again, back to what I was talking about, it's one box. It's not like storage units full of stuff you can't live without. It's one box.
And again, I think that it's a great way for you to, for listeners to explore what actually has meaning for them and what doesn't, right? We can all have hobbies. That doesn't mean we're passionate about it.
It's true.
Hobbies are fun and enjoyable. I know some people that love to do jigsaw puzzles.
But they might not be passionate about
jigsaw
puzzles. I don't know anybody
who's ever told me they're passionate about jigsaw puzzles. They love doing them. But it's not like life is not complete without a jigsaw puzzle. There might be somebody out there that does that.
I'm sure there are.
You know, I know that there are. I know that there are. Life would not be complete for me without books. There's a great example.
Oh, yeah.
But I can live without a movie. And yet there are some people, it's completely opposite. They don't read a book and they love to go to the movies or watch them on Netflix or whatever.
Life would not be complete for me without beautiful scenic vistas, which is a part of why I travel or hike. That is what is behind traveling and hiking for me, is beautiful vistas. I like to see live paintings with my eyes.
So explain that a little bit.
Live paintings with my eyes?
Yeah. So I give you a great example. As an outsider listening to you, growing up, every kid in Southern California at one time or another was taken to Disneyland. And when we went to Disneyland, we had back in my day, we had A tickets.
We found some A tickets in the drawer.
Oh, they're worth money now, probably.
So
A tickets. The A ticket let you go, among other things, on the frickin' train.
Yes.
That's what the A ticket was, right?
Okay.
And the A ticket, when you went on the train, took you through Disney's version of the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
Do you remember that?
I don't know.
So you had deer in the front, and the shrubbery, and then you looked out and it looked surreal, right? It never looked real until thousands of years later. My sister moved near to Arizona, near the Grand Canyon. And the first time I went to the Grand Canyon, it was like, oh my God, this looks like something at Disneyland.
Yes.
Right? It was surreal.
Beautiful.
I mean, it was literally, and some of our listeners, having never seen the Grand Canyon, I don't even know if you know how to even explain this. A photograph doesn't even do it justice.
No.
The majesty of it, the distance involved in it. You know, lightning strikes on the north side, and it's like, it's just surreal is the best word that I could use for it. So now I'm saying this to you. Is this the kind of thing that lights you up?
Yes.
And what does it inspire in you? What is it that that does for you?
I don't know that it necessarily inspires anything inside of me. It just brings a sense of energy, peace, joy. It's like a lot of emotional awe. It's awe inspiring.
There you go. So that's what I was looking for, because I can tell you the thing that I noticed at the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. Were two things I noticed at the Grand Canyon: how small I was.
Yes.
And how beautiful everything else was.
Yes. Yes.
And so there's a passion to that, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of liken passion to, I did theater for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And any of you who've gone to a great show, a live show, mm-hmm. you keep going back to live shows because mm-hmm. you want to re-experience the that great feeling. Live show that you had before. You know, you don't get it, so you keep going back. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like
Hamilton. So everyone gave a standing ovation. And
yeah.
And I agreed with them. And I was shocked after all the hype. I'm such a person that tends to be disappointed by the hype. But that was one of those experiences where everybody was on their feet at the end.
And one of the shows for me was We Will Rock You. It's the Queen musical. It's not even available in the U.S. And it's not even available in the U.S. anymore. I went back to London. And it was one of those shows where it's like my jaw dropped. It was so amazing.
I missed it.
Right? And, a lot of the Andrew Lloyd Webber shows are very similar to this jaw-dropping, inspiring, and it's inspiring experience, and it's a passion.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use this word very carefully, that we chase. You want to experience it again.
Except that if I take a picture of these vistas that I've visited, and I do often relook at my pictures or hang them on the wall or put them as a screensaver that rotates. When I see the picture, I feel the feeling again.
Yeah.
I don't have to keep chasing it. I can,
that's a reminder.
I can sit with it.
But see, I'm going to again push back a little bit here. I think you do chase it, which is why you look for beautiful vistas elsewhere.
Yeah, right? I mean, what I'm saying is there's a yes, it's a both. It's not an either or. It's a yes and.
Right.
Yes, I do like experiencing new things that I haven't seen before. And I also can re-experience and live with the gratitude I feel for having experienced things.
Absolutely. So mm-hmm. one is reigniting the passion and the other one is following the passion.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I do the same thing. I listen to the soundtrack from We Will Rock You. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I could go mm-hmm. listen to a Queen soundtrack.
Yes.
I listen to the play soundtrack.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
The live audience soundtrack. Okay. And it brings up all of those passionate recollections, right?
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I bring that up to everybody because there's just a number of tools in here to help you keep moving forward rather than moving away from where you want to go in life.
Okay.
So
what are more of the tools?
Well, it's actually more of a question because we're sitting here talking about finding your passion now. And there are going to be people that say, yeah, but I don't have any of that. And so it just so happened that somebody that I actually really love reading her stuff, her name's Ash Amberge. And she created the Middle Finger Project. It was right up my alley, right?
What is the Middle Finger Project?
Oh, you'd have to go see it. It's just she is a kick in the frickin' pants.
Literally. Okay.
But it's basically the middle finger to everything.
Okay.
It's like go live your life.
Okay.
And anybody that doesn't want to come along for the ride,
can
kiss my ass.
Okay.
Now, she doesn't say it that way, but I'm saying that's essentially this very irreverent, in-your-face, stripped-down, raw way she talks. And I love this, right? Because it's so different than the politically correct dance that we all do.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out, in preparation for today's show, she actually wrote a blog post called, "But What's My Passion? What's My Thing?" And it's like, okay, Ash, you know, I've read your other stuff. I'll read through this. And then she got down to this, and I've done the same thing. And it's like, oh my God, this actually makes sense. So I'm going to share it with you. All right.
Okay.
So she says that generally there are two things that happen. Two things immediately jump out. I'm skipping through some of the blog. You guys can go read it. Number one, I don't know what I want to do, so I fall back to what I know. And number two, how am I going to make any money doing that? Which is what you were talking about, right?
Uh-huh.
And around the ideas go, and they never get off the ground. Does anybody feel like that? And she then, and again, I'm going to skip through this. She then talks about a thought exercise. And I love this, so I'm going to share it with you. It's not mine, it's hers. Okay. If you could make 100 of whatever you make completely on your own time, assuming money was no issue, what would you create? I'm going to say it again. If you could make 100, and I'm going to add my own little annotation, because I've used this on a few clients and I've refined it a little bit. It's if you could make 100 of whatever you make in a row. So it's not like you're pacing yourself.
Uh-huh.
It's you have to sit down, Michelle, and do 100 of the same thing all in a row.
Well, if I said a painting, do I get to paint different things?
Yeah, your decision.
Then it would be a painting.
So let me give you the keys that she says, right? The keys are twofold. A, the idea that you're making something and you're allowed to be creative. And two, that you're going to do it 100 times, so you better well have fun with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Got it.
So as she puts it, what would you be proud to put together, to curate, or to spearhead?
Yeah. I have clients that it would be 100 songs or 100 movies.
And now you know their passion.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing. Okay. So, you know, you talked about painting, 100 paintings that would all light you up. They're all different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, because it's not confined to that,
mm-hmm.
if you could tell me I could do 100 creative things in a row, I'm all lit up, because I'm all about creativity, right? And everybody is going to be different. She gives examples in here, by the way. 100 websites, 100 photographs, 100 pages, 100 rooms, 100 designs, 100 ideas, 100 outcomes, 100 happy moments, 100 happy clients. Mm. And then she says, what would you make? And she says, the interesting thing is that when you use this thought exercise, I'm going to use her words now, it cuts through the mind fuckery of, but how am I going to make money with it? And this is why I love the way she talks, right?
Uh-huh.
And I agree with her that most of us are not very good at lighting ourselves up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want you to think about what you're experiencing right now when you think of creating 100 paintings.
Yeah.
What that feels like inside. And to me, that's the passion.
Right. And you're right, though. Like, I must be a little bit mixed. Because it also would be, if I could decorate 100 rooms on someone else's dime, if I could do 100 photographs, you know, so there are different aspects of beauty and creativity that.
So you're where I am, right? Because I didn't confine it to writing a song or writing a poem or doing a podcast. I said, I want 100 creative things in a row.
Yo, that would be my favorite, because then I could do a podcast here, a poem there, a photography there. Yeah, I agree with you.
Right. Because I mean, at least, it kind of ties. See, now it kind of ties in, going back and closing the loop. When I tell you, I'll read 3 or 4 books simultaneously.
Sure.
And it kind of goes to that. I want to be able, I want the freedom to create when, where, and as I want.
Yes, I love that.
And that's what I'm so passionate about. This is why mm-hmm. both of us do so many different mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. we are very blessed to be able to have the freedom mm-hmm. to do a podcast from Dallas if you need to do it.
That's right.
Right? To pre-record a show if we need to do it. To mm-hmm. come up with the topics that we, I mean, we're mm-hmm. doing this podcast. This is a creative process for me.
Mm-hmm. For me too.
Mm-hmm. And when we sit down and you and I brainstorm on Thursdays, right? It's
exciting. Okay,
here's the things that we do. It's mm-hmm. the exploration of strange new worlds, right? You yes, tell me yes. about some, you tell me about some brand new therapeutic
technique
and it's like my eyes light up. Doesn't mean I'll always like the technique, right. But the fact that there's something new out there to explore.
I know, it's fun.
It's exactly.
That is fun. That's, I mean, really, Scott, we've been doing this every week for how long?
We're moving into our fourth year.
Wow. And it doesn't even feel like it's been that long.
It doesn't.
That's the difference also with when you're doing something that you're passionate about is the time goes by.
I mean, we've all
heard this. It doesn't feel like a grind.
This goes into your specialty of uh-huh. being in the zone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think they go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife can tell when I'm not here.
When you're in the zone.
When I'm in, she says, Scott, you're just checked out. Right. I'm in the middle of creating a new magic effect right now. And she knows. Ooh. She knows damn well that it's like I'm sitting here, I'm watching TV, and the TV is just on.
It's just on for background noise.
Problem is when I have conversations, they're just on.
Sorry, Carolyn.
I need to catch myself too, by the way, right? And I'm not great at it, but I'm getting better at it. I can tell when everything is consuming, not overwhelming. And there's the difference. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm consumed by mm-hmm. the passion of creating. Mm-hmm. You know, if I write a book, oh my God, right before a book is published, I'm obviously never birthed a baby, but it's like, oh my mm-hmm. God. You know, yeah. the pre-publication pain and angst and pushing and willing it into existence and all of that. While there's the pain of that, there's the passion that's motivating moving forward.
Wow.
And well, so I guess
makes
you know
a lot for, of sense.
And I guess for our listeners, that the big thing that I want to pass on, and I learned this from doing books, what is going to keep you moving through the pain towards an outcome that you desire?
Okay. Yeah.
Because this is why I fell in love, by the way, with Phil Stutz and his approach to therapy.
Uh-huh.
He has three things that he says are constants in life. These are like his universal truths.
Okay.
And I've adopted them because I use a different way of explaining them, but he's got three universal truths that we all have pain, we all have uncertainty, and we all have to keep working through the process or moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. And for him, those are invariable. Those don't change. Mm-hmm. Life is pain. Life is uncertainty. Life is working and moving forward. Mm-hmm. So, and this kind of ties in with some of the stuff we've talked about, I believe, with Mark Mason, who wrote the book, The Gentle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Mm-hmm. You know, Mark likes to ask the question, so how much pain do you want in your life?
Yes.
Because you can't get rid of it.
Right.
So what are you willing to suffer for?
Right.
To get where you want to be. And to me, that's the passion.
Okay. And then were there other questions that our listeners could?
I really, and I don't want to make this too complicated, because a lot of the, at least for me, when I work with a client, it gets very messy if they're trying to get a passion and a purpose.
Yes.
And I don't know that it has to be that messy.
It doesn't.
I think that to a certain degree, we all know our passions already. It's rediscovering them.
Right.
Now you can get new ones, right?
Right, right.
But I still think there's a driving life force behind the passion. I'm listening to you. It's the same thing you were as a little kid.
It is.
You know, there are things that we find that just light us up. Mm-hmm. And I think finding your passion now is, I'll use the word surrender. You know that we've talked about this before. It's like going to bed at night. You don't will yourself to sleep. You allow yourself to sleep. You surrender into sleep. I think surrendering into your passion is a whole lot more productive for our listeners than forcing a purpose.
That makes sense.
And
yeah, let your passion find you and surrender to it as opposed to forcing
it.
And
I'll throw in one of my little universal truths, and that is, I don't think people create a purpose. I think a purpose finds you.
That makes sense to
me. So I have said before, I'm not a man with a purpose. I'm a purpose with a man. But I am a man with passion.
So I'm going to give our listeners, just in summary, three questions. If Scott's questions so far haven't helped guide you, or you want a few more to think about, then I would give you these three to think about, which is, I mentioned it's slightly like, what can you incessantly talk about to the point where it might even bore other people to tears? That can be a good indicator of what you're passionate about, or at least it could be, you know, lead you in the right direction. So that's number one. Number two, if you were to receive an award for something, a publicly appreciated award for something, what would that be? Because that could lead to something you're passionate about. I'm not sure. And the third one is kind of like what Scott was saying. If money was no object, or you won the lotto, what would you do with your time?
And so I love that last question, by the way. I actually ask my clients, I'll modify it just a little bit if you don't mind.
Please.
If you were a billionaire
with a B,
what would you do every day? Every day, what would you do? Now, you're not going to just sit around and go, hey, I'm a billionaire.
Right.
And you find your passion pretty quickly.
Yep. Yeah. I hope that's helpful for those of you that have tuned in today. Hopefully you've picked up a couple little reminders and are inspired or passionate to do something about this topic for yourselves.
So now that we've done this, this will tie in with what we're going to do next week, which we've done ever since we've started our podcast. And we are going to revisit and create your five power words for 2024.
Woohoo! It's here, people.
So it's going to be interesting, because Michelle and I have this wonderful little give and take. Every time we create our five words, something happens to the other one.
Yes, exactly. Like if Scott creates a word, it can cause Michelle to deal with that word for a whole year. What was our worst year, Scott?
That was 2 years ago. It was
was it unfuckable? Was that the one?
Unfuckwithable.
Like, unfuckwithable. That was an awful year.
Yeah.
My dad died. That was a pretty bad year. But you know what? I think we're both stronger for what we went through.
Oh, I think, well, what is it? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Although I happen to like the saying, what doesn't kill you better run.
I agree. I like that saying much better. What doesn't kill you better run.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Please remember to like, share, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so that we may continue to grow. And with that, may you find your passion. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.